This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It's almost as scary as watching your dog growl at the wall and realize he sees something you don't. Get a quote at geico.com.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Records breaking. I'm Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay. Good morning and welcome into Friday, October 30th. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Americans are setting new marks on two different fronts. First, by voting early in historic numbers. Second, with a record number of COVID infections.
Hurricane Zeta is now blamed on at least six deaths as it makes its way across the southeast. In addition, millions were left in the dark.
President Trump and rival Joe Biden are crisscrossing the Midwest today in a final pitch to voters. Hear their messages during stops in Florida.
And the car industry, running its sales engine.
There were some really dire predictions about how all this was going to play out. I mean, you know, the car companies couldn't even make cars. Their factories were down for almost 2 months in April and May. And, you know, once they got them back online, then the question was, well, who's going to buy a car during a pandemic?
Mike Colias at the Wall Street Journal on car sales rising and why we're paying full price. More than 80 million Americans have already voted in this presidential election, putting us on pace for the highest participation rate in over a century. By comparison, only 47 million votes came before Election Day in 2016. Huge numbers of people have voted by mail or at early in-person polling sites amid concerns the coronavirus could spread at busy Election Day voting places. On the campaign trail, meanwhile, Democratic nominee Joe Biden spoke in Tampa.
Donald Trump has given up. Over the weekend, the White House chief of staff said, and I'm quoting, we're not going to control the pandemic. It's obvious he's not.
President Trump also visited Tampa yesterday.
My plan for America will deliver a safe vaccine. You're going to have it in a few weeks. It's coming very quickly. Great companies, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, Pfizer, many, many companies. You're going to have it.
Elsewhere, siding with Republicans, a federal appeals court ruled yesterday that Minnesota's plan to count absentee ballots received after Election Day was illegal, adding there's no, quote, pandemic exception to the Constitution. Hurricane Zeta is now blamed on the deaths of at least six people in the southeast, and more than 2 million people were without power after the storm hit the Gulf Coast and moved northeast. The first confirmed death from Zeta was a 55-year-old man in New Orleans, as we told you, who was electrocuted by a downed power line. This was followed by four deaths in Alabama and Georgia from trees crashing down on homes. A Mississippi man drowned when he was trapped in rising seawater after taking video of the storm. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards says officials are working as quickly as they can.
Urban search and rescue operations are underway. They're also engaging in route clearance, but also delivering generators and taking additional requests.
It is the fifth named storm to strike Louisiana this year and the 27th named storm this season, one fewer than the record set in 2005. The eight named storms that have entered the Gulf of Mexico since June have caused repeated offshore evacuations and cut millions of barrels of U.S. oil and gas output. Numbers and notes now on the coronavirus. Daily hospitalizations surpassed 45,000 this week for the first time since mid-August. Also, we set a record this week for new COVID-19 cases over a seven-day period with more than 500,000 infections. Daily deaths are also climbing, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. Utah Governor Gary Herbert.
We're concerned, as we've said 7.5 months ago when we started this quest, the number one issue is let's make sure we don't overwhelm the medical system.
In Texas, El Paso County Judge Richard Samaniego.
Since there is no place to hide, all of us together have to come together to fight this enemy.
He said they're also struggling there. Wisconsin, meanwhile, on track to run out of ICU beds and nurses to staff them in as little as 2 weeks, as the state reported 5,200 positive COVID-19 cases Tuesday, with only 187 beds available. Meanwhile, in the world of sports, the 125th Boston Marathon will be postponed from the third Monday in April to at least the fall of 2021. It's 11 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, visit planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals. Hey, thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Friday. Every election, millions of Americans go through a similar thought process. They think voting doesn't matter or isn't worth their time. In any given election, between 35 and 60% of eligible voters do not cast a ballot. Here's why from Laura Bronner, editor at 538.com. Laura, explain your findings.
So this is a really interesting question because I think a lot of people who are following the election are people who are very politically engaged and who are definitely going to be voting. And so I think that this look at a lot of Americans who either never vote or vote sort of sometimes when they can, when they get around to it, when they particularly care, is something that is super important for how elections turn out and something that a lot of us don't necessarily have a lot of personal experience with. Some of the stuff we found that a lot of people, that there are sort of two different drivers of why people don't engage. And I think one of them is sort of structural factors. They, you know, a lot of people can't vote. Like a lot of people face long lines to vote, or they found themselves missing voter registration deadlines, or they have trouble getting off work in order to go vote. So there are barriers like that that prevent people from being able to cast a ballot. And those are particularly prevalent for Black and Hispanic people. So Black people are particularly likely to report having faced long lines. And Hispanic respondents to our survey were particularly likely to say that they haven't been able to get time off work in order to vote. Mm. And so those are really key. But that's not everything. I think for a lot of people, it's more about how they feel about the system. Some people don't think their vote matters very much, or don't think that every candidate they necessarily is someone that they particularly care about, or they don't feel like candidates necessarily need their vote in order to win.
It didn't say, I don't think, in your story that people admitted to being lazy. This didn't seem to be about that.
Well, I mean, I think that's hard to get at in a survey. It's hard to ask people, were you just too lazy to vote?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think, you know, the fact that Americans do, on the whole, think voting is important, and many, you know, most have voted in the past in at least one election. So I think that does show that it is something that matters to people. It's just not always the top priority, especially if it's about a job or about something that they can't skip.
We're speaking with Laura Bronner, quantitative editor at 538.com. Her piece is called Why Many Americans Don't Vote, and they did a deep look at some data here. Break it down by age, education, and salary, Laura.
So we found that people who vote regularly are more likely to be wealthier, are more likely to be older, and are more likely to be whiter than people who only sporadically or rarely vote. They're also more likely to have a lot of education. And that's, you know, to some extent that's reflected in the structural factors I was talking about. If you have a job where you don't necessarily have time off or have hourly shifts, that may contribute to you not being able to get time off work to vote, whereas in other jobs that might be less of an issue. Same thing for retired people. People over 65 in our survey were much less likely to say that they had encountered any of these barriers. And so I think that reflects that it's just easier to get to the polls if you don't have, you know, if you're retired, if you're not working.
What about the numbers this year, given that so many people have taken part in early voting?
Yeah, it's quite hard to draw strong inferences from the early voting this year, just because so much is different this year with the coronavirus pandemic. I think it's very hard to draw a direct comparison to previous years, just because much more people had always planned to vote early or vote absentee than in previous years. But I will say that in surveys where people were asked how excited they were to vote and how much, you know, whether they're intending to turn out, those numbers are also, I think, higher than in previous years. So there is some evidence that people are particularly, you know, people think it's a particularly important election. And that's also what we find in our poll.
Thanks, Laura. Laura Bronner, quantitative editor at 538.com. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Rasa Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
At a sweltering rally in Tampa, Florida, President Trump promised he'd deliver historic prosperity to America if reelected.
We're never going to lock down again. We locked down. We understood the disease. And now we're open for business, and that's what it is.
The rally featured a packed crowd, most of whom did not wear masks, in contrast to Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden's drive-in rally downstate in Coconut Creek.
This election is the most important one you've ever voted in, whether it's your first or 10th. Ladies and gentlemen, the heart and soul of this country is at stake, right here in Florida.
Number two.
The storm-beaten Gulf Coast is again in cleanup mode after Hurricane Zeta. At least six people have died, some 2 million without power. Southeast Louisiana officials want residents to stay home and limit water use because of power outages straining sewer systems.
96% of Plaquemines Parish right now is without electricity. It's about two-thirds of Orleans Parish and more than 80% of Jefferson Parish and some of the other parishes.
Governor John Bel Edwards says power restoration is being prioritized to polling places and local elections offices.
Number three.
The key swing state of Pennsylvania is prepping a multi-agency task force to respond to election unrest. State emergency management, state police, National Guard, Homeland Security, FBI, and cybersecurity experts have been meeting to review rumors, ongoing protests, and other potential security concerns. Philadelphia awaits the arrival of National Guard troops to protect property after the police killing of a mentally unstable black man this week sparked violence and vandalism in that city and others. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is warning the Big Apple's meaningful jump in the COVID infection rate could prompt a return to what he calls huge restrictions. His honor said if the number reaches 2%, the city could end indoor dining at restaurants. Latest figure, just over 1.9%. Michigan's tightening restrictions on indoor gatherings and has shifted the Traverse City region backwards in the state's reopening plan after coronavirus hospitalizations doubled in the last 3 weeks. A year after the Saturday Night Live writer proposed to the actress, Colin Jost and Scarlett Johansson tied the knot in a small secret wedding. And they gave Meals on Wheels America the honor of announcing their union to the world. The organization helps address hunger and isolation among senior citizens, posted the news on Instagram, and got to ask for donations to celebrate the happy couple at the same time.
Pretty cool.
Pretty classy.
Jost married, as some headlines are saying.
Uh-huh.
See what they did there. Hey, listen,
nice.
Let's hope third time's the charm for ScarJo, right? Thanks for being with us. How do you feel about getting on a plane right now? This holiday season, U.S. adults are more concerned with airline safety measures and flexibility over cost, according to a new survey by The Points Guy. In-depth analysis from Melanie Lieberman, senior travel editor at The Points Guy. Melanie, what are travelers saying?
Yeah, when we asked, you know, what were the most important factors that people were thinking about if they were deciding to travel for the holidays, safety really continues to be top of mind for so many people. They are looking for airlines that are going to keep empty middle seats blocked or reduce capacity. They're really, really looking for airlines that are strictly enforcing mask requirements. That was the single most important thing that travelers were worried about.
Mm. Yeah. You know, as we've heard, though, enforcing masks is easier said than done, right? Once we're at 30,000 feet, I can yank off the mask. Then what? Right? I'm gonna wrestle with a flight attendant, or the plane's gonna turn around and make an emergency landing because I'm disruptive. It's a tough situation.
Absolutely. It is interesting to see, though, how important that is to travelers, and they really are looking. They are looking to the airlines to try to figure that out. When I think, you know, a lot of that responsibility does fall on the travelers too.
Yeah.
To keep that mask on.
Right. When we talk about not filling a middle seat as a safety protocol here, is that something that's detailed on an airline's website if I'm going there to book a ticket?
Yeah, definitely. Airlines have been pretty outspoken about what their policies are in terms of blocking middle seats, or in this case, largely reducing capacity is still the thing that is more common for an airline to do. But travelers should really be empowered to call the airline and track their specific flight. There are really things that a lot of responsibility is going to fall on the travelers this holiday season to do the research, to call the airline, to make sure that they understand what the airline is doing, and to have a backup plan. If your flight is full and you're not comfortable, travelers really need to have a plan B this holiday season.
This is kind of a new thing, right? Where suddenly we're not just, you know, I think of myself, I typically work backwards, right? Let me find the cheap flight and, oh, yep. Let's see if it flies at a good time for me. Now it's kind of shifted.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is so interesting is that for a lot of travelers, the price of airfare is one of the big factors still, which is something we've seen in the past, certainly. But this has been such a difficult financial time for so many people that the price of airfare is still one of those factors that is really driving decision making around the holidays.
Are we still going to see those typical holiday spikes?
We are seeing a lot of really great deals on airfare, to be honest. It will certainly be more expensive than, you know, the week prior, but compared to year over year, we're looking at significant drops in airfare, a lot of award availability for travelers flying with points and miles. So for people who are looking at price as the single most important factor, there are definitely deals to be found.
Thanks, Melanie. Melanie Lieberman, senior travel editor at The Points Guy. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. So if you're working from home, are you still dressing for work? While we can all understand not wearing a tie, going to the other extreme like an old t-shirt is a little too casual. If you need to upgrade the work-from-home wardrobe, try Cuts Clothing. Technical apparel for the sport of business. GQ called them the only shirt worth wearing. They combine an athletic, tailored-looking fit with their custom-engineered, wrinkle-free, ultra-soft Pika fabric for a new level of fit, fabric, and function. I gotta say, I love wearing my Cut shirts. They're tough, they're durable, yet still flexible, willing to move with me. And now Cuts is finally out with their new polos and hoodies made with their custom Hyperloop French Terry fabric. Try Cuts and save. Cuts is loved by your favorite athletes, entrepreneurs, and even podcast hosts. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. cutsclothing.com/Gordon.
An all-star team of the world's best journalists bring you the facts each and every morning. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Friday, October 30th. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. The death toll from Hurricane Zeta is at least 6. Jobless claims fell to a 7-month low. Walmart removing guns from stores ahead of Election Day over concerns about civil unrest. In sports, Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence has COVID, will miss this weekend's game against Boston College. UPS says it's found the contents of a package that Fox News host Tucker Carlson says contains incriminating documents about Joe Biden's family. And the Massachusetts restaurant shocked by a massive tip. That story in about 20 minutes. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by Capital One. Capital One is right in the palm of your hand, so you can check your balance, deposit checks, pay bills, and transfer money from your phone with a top-rated app. This is Banking Reimagined. Get started online anytime. What's in your wallet? Capital One NA, member FDIC. The U.S. auto industry, hobbled this spring by the COVID-19 crisis, has bounced back stronger and faster than many expected, with some companies reporting record profits in the third quarter. More from Mike Colias, automotive reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Mike, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to the spring, you know, there were some really dire predictions about how all this was going to play out. I mean, you know, the car companies couldn't even make cars. Their factories were down for almost 2 months in April and May. And, you know, once they got them back online, then the question was, well, who's going to buy a car during a pandemic? But it turns out, A lot of people think that's a good idea, and we've seen, you know, to the point where now, you know, sales volumes are basically back to where they were before, maybe even a little more, and people are paying more than they were before the pandemic hit. It's been pretty remarkable.
Yeah, but tens of millions of people are, you know, furloughed or out of work, filing claims for first-time unemployment benefits. How does that square?
Yeah, it's really kind of interesting and difficult to explain. I mean, I think, you know, there's a couple basic economic factors at play. Like, the, for one, the interest rates are still really low, at historic lows, and the automakers, especially early on, kind of put their thumb on the scale and were offering really big discounts and promotional deals, like 0% interest for even up to like 6 or 7 years on big pickup trucks, for example. That helped early on. There's also been, you know, I think stimulus has helped. A lot of dealers and economists will point to that. But I think, you know, a little more anecdotal, but also more interesting, is I just think the pandemic for a lot of people has kind of altered their sort of relationships with their vehicles and what they use their vehicles for. And it's prompting some purchase decisions that we may not have seen otherwise.
And this demand that we're seeing, this jump in sales, is forcing prices higher? That's why folks are paying record prices?
Well, part of the record prices, there's two reasons, I think. One, the inventory is really low. I mentioned those 2 months where they weren't making any cars. So dealerships, I think, well into next year are going to be low on their stocks. And so you can't just go in and get what you want. And so it's become a bit of a seller's market in that sense. And that's kept prices a little higher than you would. You're not getting as good at deals.
Okay.
Other than those 0% interest deals that I mentioned earlier. But you also have people are buying bigger cars. And this kind of gets into this change in what people want. So, yes, people are commuting less. A lot of people aren't going into work. And that long term, that could have an implications for car ownership. But I think right now people are just kind of using their cars differently. For example, over the summer, I mean, a lot of people had to cancel, you know, vacations that they may have taken, air travel, but they wanted a road trip. And I personally know several people who made purchase decisions, either went and bought a minivan or bought an SUV, that they, you know, it was kind of time. And so, hey, well, if we have to drive 12 hours this summer instead of fly, maybe it's just time to do this now. I think you see a lot of that. I think you're also seeing a lot, you know, the boating industry, RVs, all that stuff is going bonkers because people want, you know, there's fewer things people can do. They're not flying. They're not eating out as much. They're not going to movies. And so they're spending their time differently. And a lot of times that calls for a new vehicle, an upgrade to a vehicle they already had. And I think that's driving it. The other thing I think is people who relied on public transit, relied on, you know, Ubers, those people want their own car. And that's showing up a lot in the used market. We're seeing a lot of demand for used cars. And I think that's at least part of it.
Got it. We're speaking with Mike Colias, autos reporter at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called U.S. Car Business Vrooms Back from Pandemic Nadir. Infections are on the rise, though. Obviously, here in the U.S., there are lots of concerns in Europe with the restrictions reemerging here. What could that mean in the weeks or months ahead?
Well, it gets back to some of the considerations we had in the spring. It's both a supply issue and a demand issue. The supply issue is, can they keep the factories open? And the car companies have done a really good job of figuring out new safety protocols, obviously masking and social distancing, but also they've over time put in some pretty sophisticated testing regimens to try to keep outbreaks from spreading in the plant.
Nice, Mike. Mike Colias, autos reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Friday. It is time now for the mic drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know everything is bigger in Texas, and that goes first and foremost for the size of the state itself. That's why a few people probably gave Austin resident Aaron Chamberlain a few side-eye glances when he said that he wanted to ride his bike around the perimeter of the Lone Star State. But he did it. He posted a photo depicting his route on Twitter this week, starting in Brownsville and ending there 58 days later. Chamberlain says 52 of those were riding days and 6 were designated rest days. All told, he rode 3,014 miles, roughly the width of the entire United States. Jeez. And he chronicled his journey with weekly dispatches on TexasMonthly.com. 3,000 miles. That jumps off the page when you see it, because everyone knows that the U.S. is about 3,000 miles wide, so he basically biked cross-country.
Now do California.
Right. Yeah, exactly. we'll see you in a couple months.
I wonder what's longer, around Texas, or if you were to loop California, you know, from...
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Top to bottom.
You know, obviously, we know California is not as wide.
Yeah.
It's sort of more long and narrow.
But it is long, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure of what the circumference situation is
right
there, but I'm sure he wants to rest a little bit before he goes on his next challenge.
Well, I never know. These guys are junkies.
Can you let him have a couple of days to put a little ice on his muscles?
But he's in shape now.
Well,
he's finally tuned.
Right.
I guess just go.
If he's ever going to do it,
right?
I guess this would be the time.
And then Alaska next year sometime.
Right. And it's either the grossest thing you've ever seen or the work of a genius who is going to change the world. In either case, one TikTok user is drawing millions of views for a video depicting his unique way of preparing a carrot smoothie. Rather than cut the carrots tediously with a knife like the rest of us mere mortals, the man with the handle steel.job instead quickly takes bites off of a carrot and then spits them into a blender. The short clip has gone viral with over 4.5 million views at last check. Now, while some were grossed out, at least one person called it terrifying. Others praised the guy for his life hack. One user wrote, "This guy is living in 2040," and others said he was their soulmate. Others reminded the detractors that this is how birds feed their young, and if it's good enough for the birds, it should be good enough for us.
Does he spit one at a time, or does he like bite off 10 tiny bites,
spit 10? Yeah, he takes like you know 8 to 10 bites and then spits the whole thing back in, and I guess then grabs another carrot and kind of does that over again until he gets enough carrots.
Yeah. The caveman invented the knife. Who knows? I don't know how many millions of years ago.
Yeah.
We should try that.
Right. I mean, this is fast. I mean, you know, he captioned the clip, you know, efficiency or this is efficient or whatever, hashtag efficient, something like that. So, you know, obviously he believes this is a life hack and he saves himself, you know, who knows how much time. He probably makes a lot of these smoothies. So over the course of a week or a month, he saves a lot of time.
If that's what he says, that's fine. Whatever you like.
I like the satisfaction of chopping carrots with a knife myself.
I tell you what, I am more likely to get injured taking the small bites,
right,
I think, than I would with a knife.
Bite your tongue?
Yeah.
Something like
that. Or bite my finger?
Right.
Yeah, as I'm gnawing like a rabbit or whatever he does.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Stick with the knife.
Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour. Today, I'm here with Josh Hunt, Executive Vice President and Chief Business Development Officer at MEDC, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Josh, what are Michigan's best selling points?
The biggest selling point for Michigan is our pure Michigan quality of life. We also have a diverse and abundant workforce and a business-friendly environment that we think is unmatched. It's also very connected to global supply chain assets. And through a comprehensive suite of programs and services, we can help businesses grow here in this state and also help provide access to our highly skilled workforce, where we have the highest concentration of engineers and some of the greatest skilled trades talent as well. Here in Michigan, we make things and we think we can be the convergence of technology and manufacturing, and there is no better place to bring your idea or product from concept to reality than here in Michigan.
To hear more of this interview with Josh Hunt from MEDC, go to thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone. Thanks for being with us. Doctors are bursting the bubble on outdoor dining pop-up pods, the coronavirus dining trend of inflatable plastic bubbles that keep diners enclosed while eating outside, as the mercury drops may not be a safer alternative to indoor dining during the coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Robert Glatter, an emergency physician at Lenox Hill Hospital in New York City, told Fox News yesterday that the reality is that outdoor dining bubbles may actually increase your risk of contracting COVID. The clear dining domes, which sell for upwards of $400 on Amazon, can fit up to anywhere to 10 people and are typically wind-resistant and waterproof. And restaurants across the country have invested in them to provide more seating since there's capacity limits indoors. Dr. Glatter, however, said air particles can remain for up to 3 hours in an enclosed space with poor air circulation or ventilation. He recommends open-air dining outdoors with heat lamps, weather permitting, where air circulation from wind currents is optimal. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Rasa Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
On the stump in Tampa, Florida, President Trump promised a mostly maskless in-person crowd that he'll deliver a safe shot against COVID-19.
My plan for America will deliver a safe vaccine. You're going to have it in a few weeks. It's coming very quickly. Great companies, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, Pfizer, many, many companies. You're going to have it.
Appearing in the same city later in the day, Democratic nominee Joe Biden told a drive-in rally that the president has abandoned the COVID battle.
Donald Trump has given up. Over the weekend, the White House chief of staff said, and I'm quoting, We're not going to control the pandemic. It's obviously
number
not.
Number two.
Chevron and Royal Dutch Shell have been redeploying personnel and ramping up and restoring production at their offshore platforms in the Gulf of Mexico, even as power crews struggle to reconnect power lines on land after Hurricane Zeta. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards.
Urban search and rescue operations are underway. They're also engaging in route clearance, but also delivering generators and taking additional requests.
The storm trashed 9 states, causing at least 6 deaths.
Number 3.
Philadelphia's police commissioner says the force will improve coordination with mental health services in the wake of Monday's fatal shooting of a black man whose family says he was suffering a mental breakdown at the time. 3 nights of unrest have led to over 200 arrests in Philadelphia. Governor Phil Murphy says the second wave of the coronavirus pandemic has hit New Jersey. The state's hit 12 consecutive days of 1,000 cases or more for the first time since the first week in May. Murphy promises Trentons aggressively sourcing personal protective equipment needed for a strong 3-month inventory. Taiwan's at 200 straight days of no domestically transmitted cases of COVID-19. It continues to record new cases and people arriving from abroad. The island has recorded 553 cases in all, just 7 deaths. A study from Children's Hospital of Chicago finds most young kids infected with COVID-19 who don't have symptoms have low levels of the virus compared with symptomatic children. Researchers say it's not clear why, and they do say the levels of virus in asymptomatic kids usually too low to show up on rapid antigen tests, leading to false negatives. New pieces to that puzzle every day.
Thank you, Rasa. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals. Massachusetts restaurant has been stunned by a recent tip it received from a group of regulars. On Wednesday, Brewers Tap and Table in Waltham posted on Facebook about receiving a $700 tip. The staff says it was shocked and humbled. A picture of the receipt showed that their bill came out to about $168. CBS Boston says the group of 8 customers came by Saturday afternoon. Kim Toomey, bartender at Brewers Tap and Table, told the TV station that she started crying when she saw the tip. She said the restaurant, like many others, is facing even more challenges as the weather gets colder and the coronavirus cases are rising again. She said with the winter months coming, they're much slower and they don't have all the tables outside anymore. The $700 tip, by the way, was split among the entire restaurant staff. In the Facebook post, Brewers Tap and Table thanked all its customers for their support during the pandemic, saying, quote, "Every visit, every order supports us." That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. It's October, and what does that mean? Well, it's Geico-ween, of course. Don't be spooked by high rates on car insurance. Geico is brewing up spellbinding savings that they're crafting just for you. See how much you could save. Get a quote today at geico.com.